Good morning, everybody. Today's shiur, and I hope that I will be able to finish it today, I'm not sure. Today's shiur is going to deal with the last question which we posed as part of our introduction to the next 10 or more chapters, the rest of Shmuel Aleph. We already dealt with the question of what happened to Shaul. How did Shaul change so dramatically? We dealt with the question whether Shaul was ill, whether he had free will or he didn't have free will. We talked about the question of whether Shaul is a player in a Greek tragedy who is caught in the vice of all sorts of factors outside of himself that determine what he is going to do. And we decided that it is not so. Shaul is troubled, but he is not ill. He has free will. He is being tested. And as I said, if I were to begin this part of Sefer Shmuel, I would say Vayehi Achar Hadvarim Ve'el, and it came to pass after these things, Ve'elokim Nisa'et Shaul. God tries him, and the trial of Shaul is first of all a source of forgiveness and atonement for him. Kapara. He was a person with sterling character, outstanding midot. Power had corrupted him, and now he was being tried and tested. It was a punishment for him that was going to be instructive, punishment from which he was going to learn. And what he is to accomplish during the course of this period of being tried and tested is to regain again those character and personality traits that he had at one time. He was a perfect individual. He was the greatest in Klal Yisrael. He was the Tov of them all. Meshichmo v'mala, from his shoulder, higher, taller than everybody, not only physically, but in his spiritual stature. The last question that we had to deal with is, why does David have to suffer for the next 2.5 years? Why must he be anointed while Shaul is still king? While Shaul is still alive? Why not wait until after Shaul passes from the scene, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu can tell Shmuel to anoint David, and then David assumes the leadership role. He's now going to be in find himself in a period of 2.5 years where Shaul is in the process of losing his kingdom, and David is in the process of gaining this kingdom, and the two of them are brought together by the Hashgacha, and a profound, protracted, difficult struggle develops between the two. Why does David have to undergo this kind of suffering? In order to fully explain my approach to the problem of David, or the problems that are faced by David, I am going to take you through a journey that is part of one of the great drashot, one of the great essays of Rav Soloveitchik. And in this great essay, he begins by dissecting and analyzing the personalities, the strengths, and the weaknesses of Rachel and Leah. It all goes back to Rachel and Leah. From Rachel and Leah, we're going to go to Yehuda and to Yosef. And from Yehuda and Yosef, we're finally going to come to Shaul and to David. I have a feeling that this Tanakh Shir is going to turn into a Parshat HaShavua, but it's really going to begin with Parshat Vayishlach all the way straight through till the end of Vayechi and the beginning of Shemot. In its final struggle, it's going to go from Yehuda and Yosef to Yehuda and Binyamin. We are now faced with the struggle between Yehuda and Binyamin. It's David and Shaul. It all begins with Leah and Rachel. Divine Providence had decreed that Yaakov was going to marry two sisters, and the Shiftei Kov, the tribes, the divine tribes that were going to make up Klal Yisrael, were going to be born from those two and another two. Avram and Sarah had one child, Yitzchak and Rivka, one couple, two children, but only one who is to carry on the heritage of Avram and Yitzchak. Yaakov has 12 children. Why? And why are the imahot, the mothers, to be Leah and Rachel? He says it all begins with the way in which Yaakov married Leah and Rachel. A highly unusual story. Why was it that Leah, how does the Torah describe Leah? That Leah was a nehor rakot, her eyes were weak, or her eyes didn't look good because of the fact that she had been crying. She cried. Why did she cry? Because she said, in the street people were saying, Lavan has two daughters, Rivka has two sons. The older son of Rivka will marry the older daughter of Lavan, and the younger son will marry the younger daughter, which means Esav is the one who is destined for Leah, and Yaakov is destined for Rachel. And it means that according to the Hashgacha, Yaakov did not want Leah. Who is the one that Yaakov loves? Yaakov loves Rachel and not Leah. And then another thing, if he is to marry Leah, if the Hashgacha wants that he should marry both Leah and Rachel, why does it have to be in such a strange way? The trickery that is involved. The fact is that Leah is in cahoots with her father, Lavan, in order to trick Yaakov into marrying her. There is even an accomplice to this crime. The accomplice is Rachel herself. Rachel is the one who gives over the simanim, so to speak, to Leah. And furthermore, a fascinating medrash, and maybe the medrash will begin to give us a way of understanding it all. The medrash says the following. In last week's Sedra, the beginning of the story of Shechem, Vateitze Dina bat Leah. Dina, the daughter of Leah, went out to see Bibnot Haaretz. And she's out there, and Shechem is the one who rapes her. Says the medrash the following. Ki'ima bita, like a mother, so is her daughter. Like a mother, so is her daughter. And the Gemara, the Medrash goes on to say that a cow is not one that will gore. The ox will not gore unless the mother also was one who was an ox that would gore. And furthermore, the Medrash becomes even, I would say, more extreme. Ein isha zona, blisha bita zona kamota. A woman does not become a harlot unless her mother was a harlot like her. This was what one rabbi said to another rabbi about Vateitze Dina bat Leah. Dina bat Leah went out. Going out? Amalosa, the other rabbi said to him, Im kein Leah imenu zona haita? So you're telling me Leah, our mother, was a zona? Amalahem, so he responded, Vateitze Leah likrato. There is another time, there's a time when Leah goes out. You remember the day that that Rachel wants the dudaim, the mandrakes that Reuven brings from the field. So Rachel wants the mandrakes, the dudaim. And Rachel, Leah says to Rachel, yes, but if so, in return, what I want is that Yaakov should come to me tonight. And it says, Vateitze Leah likrato. Leah went out toward him when he came in from the field. It says about Leah that she went out toward Yaakov, and it says about Dina that she went out. Says the Medrash, Yotza mikusheta kizona. She went out dressed like a zona. Lefichach, therefore, Vateitze Dina bat Leah. like mother, like daughter. The daughter acts like the mother. Rashi says on that Teitzei, Dina bat Leah. Dina, the daughter of Leah, went out. Why does it say bat Leah? Why doesn't it say that Teitzei Dina bat Yaakov, Dina, the daughter of Yaakov, went out? The low bat Yaakov, says Rashi. Ela al shem yitziatan nikreit bat Leah. Because she went out, she is called the daughter of Leah. Sha'af hi, because Leah also was yatzanit. Well, there are two ways to say it. An outgoing woman, or a woman who goes out. Shenema, as it says, Vateitze Leah Likrato, it says that Leah went out to Yaakov. Says Rav Soloveitchik, and it's obvious, it's clearly true, there's no doubt about it. Neither the Medrash nor Rashi mean, God forbid, to say about Leah Imenu, who was the mother of six of the tribes, half of Klal Yisrael. No one intends at all to say that she was a zona. God forbid. There is something in the terminology that is used by Chachmei Yisrael. They use a certain kind of terminology in order to get a point across. It may very well be that the term zona is the term that will leave us with an impression, what was the personality of Leah like? It does not at all mean the negative aspects of the zona, but there were certain personality and character traits that she had. She was dynamic. She was defiant. She was strong. She had might. We might call it haza chutzpah. She was not going to take anything lying down. She was going to fight for that which she wanted. She was going to go after it in a way that expressed her absolute determination, and nothing was going to stand in her way. She was going to accomplish and achieve her goal regardless of the consequences. Bederech HaTorah, not God forbid, Isur. What would many other women have done if they would have known? They would have known that they are destined for an Esav. So they're destined for an Esav. I don't know. This is my zivig. Marriages are made in heaven. This is my lot in life. I'll make the best of it. Maybe I will even be able to accomplish something with this fellow Esav. Leah will under no circumstances entertain even for a moment the idea that she is going to be the wife of Esav. She will go to all ends in order to make certain that that does not happen. Which represents in her character a tremendous amount of courage, great strength. She knows that Yaakov loves Rachel. Makes no difference to her. She is clearly one who plans and plots together with her father for completely different reasons, to deceive Yaakov. The personality of Rachel is a different kind of personality. And the personalities of Leah and Rachel are expressed in their names. The word Leah comes from the word Leot. Beli Leot means unexhausted, one who never becomes exhausted. A takeoff of that word Leah is the famous statement that Rabin wrote about Peres in his autobiography. He describes Peres as Chatran Bilti Nil'eh. A chatran is a fellow who is always digging under everyone else. Bilti Nil'eh. Nun Lamed Aleph. Inexhaustible. Never stops. Continues to dig and to plan and plot. Bilti Nil'eh. Leah is the one who never becomes exhausted from going after that which is hers. Yes. A shodesh is a root. Lisharesh is to uproot. You know where else Rashi says it? And I've made a study of all the places Rashi says it in Tanakh, or nearly all. By Yaakov, when the Malach hits Yaakov in the Kaf Hayarech, so it says, Ki Toka, Kaf Yerech Yaakov. Toka. What does Rashi say? Over there. What does the word Toka mean? Toka means something that is locked into the ground, solid. A person is tokeya ohalo. He puts the stake of his of the tent into the ground. But what does it mean by Yaakov? By Yaakov, it means, on the contrary, that his hip bone, the bone was removed from its place. Rashi there also brings a number of other examples where the same word means both things. Yeshayahu talks about Yateid Takuha B'makom Ne'eman. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring the Jewish people and he is going to establish us here like a spike into the ground. Takuha B'makom Ne'eman. Faithful, it's going to remain there. Yet the same word means precisely the opposite. A pasuk in Yeshayahu, Misa'eif Pu'ara. Misa'eif means to remove the branches of a tree. And then in Yeshayahu itself, Si'ifeha means the branches that are on a tree. So the word Leia means both things. It means exhausted and inexhaustible. And that's a fascinating thing that I don't know if it appears in other languages, but there are many, many places in Rashi where Rashi is going to point out that this is one of those words that has that double meaning. It has this same shodesh, but it means precisely the opposite. So Leia is inexhaustible, indefatigable. Did I say that right? Indefatigable? No. I said it correctly, huh? Very good. Okay. That's the personality of Leia. Great strength. Absolutely determined. Rachel, on the other hand, is calm, peaceful, the one who is... What's a Rachel mean? A Rachel is a Shepsala. She is like the Shepsala who's not determined and doesn't fight and will follow, will even at times maybe go like the sheep, so to speak, the proverbial sheep to the slaughter. She not only agrees to become an accomplice to the deception of Yaakov, she assists. Can you imagine what it meant to her? For 7 years, she's waiting to marry the person whom she loves more than anything else in the world. And she gives all of that up. That, of course, takes great strength also, but it's a different kind of strength. The strength of pshara, compromise, the strength of vitur, to give up things. Rachel is the Rachel, completely different. During all of the suffering, we only hear her speak out once when she says to Yaakov, Hova li banim, give me children, v'im ayin, and if not, meita anochi, I'm going to die. The Rav says that the difference between Leah and Rachel is that Leah goes out to achieve and accomplish what it is that she wants. And Rachel, for all intents and purposes, is the one who is the great enabler. She paves the way for others. Leah is the one who paves, Rachel paves the way for Leah. She makes things easier for Leah. Leah will accomplish her goal, but it's the result of Rachel who has helped her. We are going to see that Yosef is going to pave the way to Malchus, to kingdom for Yehuda. There will be a struggle between the two. But in the final analysis, it will be Yehuda who is going to become king and not Yosef. Shaul, who comes from Rachel, is the one who is going to pave the way for David. What is it about Rachel and Leah? the Rav also begins to bring us into the world of Kabbalah and Chassidut. Rachel is the Midah of Chesed, she is kindness. Leah is the Midah of Gvura, strength. Yaakov is the Midah of Tiferet, beauty, grandeur, majesty. In Kabbalah, when Chesed and Gevura are joined, you have Tiferet. The harmonious blending of those two midot. Chesed, together with might and strength, power. Those two create the personality that is Tiferet. Amongst the 12 children of Yaakov, who becomes Chesed and who becomes Gevura? Chesed is going to be Yosef, and Gevura is going to be Yehuda. What is Yosef? Well, let's get to this week's Sefer. What was and you will see it's all going to bear directly on what we are talking about. In this week's Sefer, there are two dreams. At the beginning of the Sefer, Yosef has two dreams. His first dream is, V'hinei anachnu basada, he tells his brothers, we were out in the field and we were putting together bundles of grain, and what happened? All the bundles, V'hinei anachnu ma'almim alumi betoch hasada, we are making bundles of grain in the field, V'hinei koma alumati v'gam nitzava, my bundle of grain stood up and remained erect, V'hinei tesu ben alumotechen, your bundles of grain surrounded mine, batishtachaven ola alumati, and they bowed down before my bundle of grain. Vayomrelo Echov, his brother said to him, Olof, Timloch aleinu, imashol timshol banu, are you going to be king over us? Are you going to rule over us? Vayosifu od snoato, they hated him for his dreams and for his words. He has a second dream. The second dream, and he tells this to his brothers. And he said, b'hinei cholamti cholomot, I've had another dream. The sun and the moon and 11 stars, mishtachavimli, bowing down to me. He tells this dream not only to his brothers, but he also tells it to his father. And his father got angry with him, and he told him, what is this dream that you dreamt? Do you think I am going to come with your mother and your brothers, and I'm going to bow down to you to the ground? Here it says, the last pasuk before Sheni, in this week's Sefer, is Vayikanu bo Echav. His brothers were jealous of him. But the father kept, remember this, in a sense, the father has a feeling that in some way this is going to become true. Something is going to happen here. There is something about Yosef that is very, very special. There are many things about Yosef that are very special. What's fascinating is, after the first dream, it says his brothers hate him. After the second dream, it says that his brothers envy him. Shouldn't it be that after the second dream, they should hate him even more? There's a difference between the two dreams. Their essential nature talks of completely different things. The first dream is the one about the grain in the field. That dream talks about economic power, great wealth, organizational skills. The second dream talks already about a great personality. So to speak, the first dream is about oretz, that which grows from the ground, about things that have to do with this world, material greatness. The second dream already talks of shamayim, the shemesh, yareach, achad asar kochavim. The second dream already is talking of something that reflects a spiritual and an intellectual greatness. The brothers have told him after the first dream, do you think you're going to be king over us or Moshel over us? There's a difference between Melech and Moshel. Melech is the one who has all of the qualities, not merely the quality of this earth. Melech is the one who has the intellectual, the spiritual, the moral, and the ethical attributes of greatness. In the first dream really represents Yosef as being a Moshel, a ruler, but not Melech. The second dream already, when it's the sun and the moon and the stars that are bowing down to him, we are already talking of a man who has dreams and visions of spiritual greatness, of moral greatness, intellectual greatness. That already represents the qualities of kingdom. For this they envy him. They don't hate him for that. A young man who has such visions, and they know that Yosef has tremendous talent. Yosef is the only one of the characters in Torah that are referred to as Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef is the Tzadik. That means he has absolutely sterling qualities of character and personality and midas tovos. Yosef is an extremely unusual person, and that's why he's referred to as Yosef HaTzadik. He has all of the trappings that are necessary to be a king. His intellectual greatness, his spiritual greatness, he is the great mankal of the world. He is the great executive director of the world. A world that is going to starve. Who is the one that brings together all of the grain of the mightiest empire of the day and prepares food for a whole world? Yosef has tremendous managerial skills. And in addition to that, he's Yosef HaTzadik. And Yosef has visions of greatness. And not only does he have visions of greatness, but he has all of the requirements that go with it. For this already, his brothers envy him. Because this, they realize, represents a greatness of spirit. Small people don't have visions of that sort. The father, Vayigar Bo'aviv, his father yells at him, dresses him down, but on the other hand, Aviv Shamar Et HaDavar, the father knows that Yosef has all of the qualities that are necessary for him to become great. Who is the one with whom Yaakov is closer than anybody else? Yaakov is closest to Yosef. The Medrash says, and Rashi brings it, Kol Mashi Ida LeYaakov, whatever happened to Yaakov happened to Yosef. Yaakov had to run away from Golus because of his brother. Yosef had to run away from Golus because of his brother. Yaakov suffered, Yosef suffered. Yaakov, Rashi says, and Yosef are lookalikes. Ziv ikunin, he looks. You took a look at Yosef and you said that this is Yaakov. The years are going to pass. Aviv shamar et hadavar, the father knows that there is truth. There is truth to what Yosef says. The years pass, and you know what happens? Yosef becomes the shalit, the ruler of all of the land of Egypt. For that matter, in Parashat Vayigash, when he reveals himself finally to his brothers, so he says, God has made me Mosheil L'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, the ruler. Not Melech. He remains, even in Mitzrayim, he remains the second in command to Paro. He's not Melech, but he is Mosheil. The brothers come to him. Why do the brothers come to him? They come to Mitzrayim because they have to buy grain. And here the brothers come and they bow down. They bow down before Yosef. Do you know what Yosef sees in his mind's eye when his brothers are bowing down to him as they come to purchase grain? The fulfillment of the first dream. You need my... Your material greatness depends on me. I am the one who is going to... feed you and provide for you. They're coming to buy grain, and the eleven stalks of grain stand, and they bow down before the grain of Yosef. But for this, that's not enough for Yosef. Why doesn't Yosef reveal himself to his brothers when they come the first time to Mitzrayim? Because Yosef knows that he had another dream. And the one that he really wants fulfilled, and so the Ramban says, he has to wait until the sun and the stars are going to bow down to him. What does that represent? That represents if his father Yaakov is going to bow down to him. If his father Yaakov bows down to him, that means the leadership of the family is going to go from Yaakov to Yosef. Malchus, kingdom, is going to be Yosef's. He therefore sets the stage to bring his father to Mitzrayim. How is he going to bring his father to Mitzrayim? He knows there's only one way. If he gets Binyamin to to Mitzrayim, and if he keeps Binyamin in Mitzrayim, then he knows that ultimately the father will have to come down because Binyamin is being held there. Therefore, all of the machinations of Yosef, he accuses his brothers of being spies. He tells them, in order to prove that you are not spies, I want you to bring your baby brother. Only then will I know that you are honest people. They finally bring the baby brother, and Yosef frames him in order to keep him there, and then comes the great confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef. The confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef is the struggle between two people who have the qualities of kingship. Who is the one that's going to emerge ultimately as the victor? What Yosef knows is that if ultimately his father will bow down to him, he's king. But it's not to be. When Yehuda stands before Yosef and engages him in verbal struggle, Yosef is overcome with emotion, and he reveals himself to his brothers, and he knows at the moment that he reveals himself to his brothers that his father will never bow down to him. The father will not bow down before Yosef. He may bow down for the Moshel of Mitzrayim, the ruler of Mitzrayim, but not before Yosef. So he knows that his dreams are shattered, and ultimately Malchus is going to be given to Yehuda. And what is the bracha that Yaakov gives to Yehuda in Parshat Vayechi? Yehuda, ato yoducha achecho, your brothers will bow before you. Yishtachavu lecha b'nei imecha, they will bow down before you. Yehuda, yodcha ba'orefa yevecho, your hand is going to be at the neck of your enemies. Yehuda is going to be kelavi shachein betorav zeroa of kakot. He's going to be like the lion who leaps out against the enemy. Malchus is going to go to Yehuda. Yosef, therefore, is like his mother Rachel. He prepares the way for Yehuda, just as Rachel prepares the way for Leah. To understand the struggle between Yehuda and Yosef a little bit better, the Rav says the following. One of the magnificent works of the Rambam is the Shmona Prakim L'Harambam. The Shmona Prakim L'Harambam, the eight chapters of the Rambam, these eight chapters are the Rambam's introduction to his commentary on Pirkei Avot. And obviously, of course, there are eight chapters in it, and that's why it's called the Shmona Prakim. In the Shmona Prakim L'Harambam, the Rambam describes two kinds of personalities. One personality he refers to is the Chosid HaMe'ula, the exceptionally pious individual. The second is HaKovesh Et Yitzcho, the one who is able to conquer his desires, his inclinations. The Chosid HaMe'ula, the Rambam says the following: what is this extremely, exceptionally perfect, pious person? Nimshar bepulato, he is drawn in all that he does. Acharmashe heiruhu taavato utchunato, he follows his desire and his personality, but his desire and personality are only to do good. V'yaseh tovot, and he does that which is good. For whom mitaveh v'nichsaf alayim, he desires and he yearns for it. He does good because he wants to do good. He loves doing good. He's drawn to doing good. That means the Chosid HaMe'ula is in his personality a man of great morality. That by birth he was graced and endowed with all of the good character traits. And there's a harmonious blending of goodness within him from his very creation, from his very beginning. His essential nature is good. He's a person who's calm and he's moderate and he's understanding by his very nature. He's a man who has tremendous intellectual abilities. He does that which is good and is right, and he does it in a natural way. There's no struggle. There is no conflict. The other personality that the Rambam describes is Moshel Benafsho, the one who rules over his own soul. He's the absolute opposite of the Chosid Hamu'ula. And the Rambam describes him in the following way, HaMoshel B'Nafsho, the one who rules over his will, Afal Pisha Osa HaMasim HaTovim V'HaChashuvim, even though he does good, good deeds, important deeds, Hu Osa Otam, he does them, and at the same time, Hu Mit'aveh El HaPu'ulot HaRa'ot, he desires to do evil. V'Nichsaf Aleihen, and he yearns to do the thing that is wrong, but V'Yichboshet Yitzro, he conquers his inclination. V'yachlokalav, and he's going to wage war with his Yetzer Hara. He will struggle, but he will conquer, and he will vanquish the Yetzer Hara. And even at times, he will do good deeds. V'hu mitzta'er ba'asiyatam. He is pained by doing them. Do you hear a description? That means the Kovesh Yitzro, the Moshe Benasho, is also an ethical individual. He is a moral individual, but the price that he pays, the difficulty involved, it is for him an extreme struggle. It's not something that comes natural. It's not a harmonious blending of all of the character and personality traits, and he just yearns and longs and desires and has a passion for good. We're talking about a person who, by his nature, is impulsive, he is emotional, he acts at times instinctively, and in order to calm him down, in order to turn him into a moderate, intelligent individual who acts properly, requires from him great effort. And it may be a lifetime struggle. These two personalities are the personalities of Yehuda and Yosef. Yosef is the Ish Tzaddik. There's a Rashi at the very beginning of Parashat Shmot, when it says again that Yaakov and his children, Eile Shmot b'nei Yisrael, Haboyim Mitzrayim, Eif Yaakov Ishu Beito Bao, and he lists all of the people who are in Mitzrayim, and it says, V'yihi kol nefesh yotze yerech Yaakov, all of those who came from Yaakov, shivim nefesh, V'yosef hoya b'Mitzrayim, and Yosef was in Egypt. So Rashi is troubled. If we listed all of the children of Yaakov, Yosef is also one of the children of Yaakov. Why does the Pasuk have to point out the Yosef, Yosef was in Egypt? Aside from that, we knew it. So says Rashi, who Yosef? Ela, Lahudiachot. Do you know why the Pasuk points out Yosef was in Egypt? Lahudiachot comes to tell us, see the koso shel Yosef, the piety of Yosef. Who Yosef, Haroe et son of him, that was the Yosef, who was the shepherd of his father's sheep. Who Yosef, Shehoyah b'Mitzrayim, this is the Yosef that was in Egypt, v'nase melech, and he became king, v'omad b'tzitko, and he remained pious. Do you know what Rashi is describing? A personality who has remained firm, loyal, strong throughout all of the vicissitudes of life and all of the trials and tribulations made absolutely no difference to Yosef. In a sense, there's a certain calm about Yosef in all of the storms that are taking place around him. He was the same when he was a shepherd at 17 years old. He's the same at 30 when he becomes the Moshe of Mitzrayim. He is the same years later. There is something constant about him. Constant. Because by nature he has tremendous ability. He is therefore able to overcome the seduction of the wife of Potiphar. And what is it, Chazal say, what is it that assists him? It's a great seduction. It's difficult. But he sees the vision of his father. He sees his father's face in front of him. It's the same Yosef. We're talking about a person. If you're going to stop to think about the suffering of Yosef, the years in the dungeon, the years that he's separated from his family, rejected by his family, and omeid b'tzidko, there's something about him that is so, he's calm in the middle of the tempest, he's the eye in the middle of the storm, he remains the tzaddik. Not so Yehuda. Yaakov, it's true, and because whatever Yosef was, I read to you, I also mentioned the other Rashi, that whatever Yosef was, Yaakov was. In other words, Yosef got so much of what he was, he indeed got it from Yaakov. The question is, what is Yehuda in comparison to Yosef? That's what we have to know. You're absolutely right. Yosef is the spitten image of his father. The father goes through all of these difficult periods of time, and he remains strong. I have a feeling you're even more right than I thought you are.
Also comes from Rachel.
Yes, Rachel, of course. Yosef is a harmonious blending of his father, and his mother. Yes, and he therefore is able to overcome. I mean, he has problems with his brother just as his mother had with her sister. His father at the beginning of this sedra sends him out to go out and see how his brothers are doing. Ramban says he could have found all sorts of excuses. He could have turned to his father and said, "Tata, you really want me to go out to my brothers? You know that the relationship between my brothers and myself is not a good one." But he did it. I'm not going to deal with that. That I need another hour. What was the struggle between Yosef and his brothers? That's completely different story, a very important story, but that requires a shear of its own. But he goes out, and then even when he's wandering in the field, and hear the Mepharshim say he certainly had an excuse. He could have come home and said, "I went to look for them, and I couldn't find them. I called, and the line was busy. Well, there was no answer. Finished. So that's it. I did what I had to do." And the man in the field, the mysterious man who meets him in the field as he's wandering through the field, he asks him, "What are you looking for?" So he says, "Et achai anochi mevakesh. I'm looking for my brothers. He sees them as brothers despite the fact that they hate him and they are envious of him. Please tell me," he says, this week said, "Ephohim roim, where are they grazing the cattle?" Vayomer ha'ish, the man said, "Nasum," he said, "they journeyed from here because I heard them saying, let's go to Dothan." The man does not refer to them as his brothers. The man is sending him a message that they're not his brothers. Yosef refuses to hear. Vayelech, the pasuk says, Vayelech Yosef achar echov. Yosef, despite that, he could have gone back. He could have stopped. But he goes after his brothers and he found them in Dothan. So Yosef is the tzaddik ha-me'ule, the chosid ha-me'ule of the Rambam. The one who goes through the most difficult things and he remains firm, strong, great fortitude, a certain calm about Yosef, very calm. I mean, there's something to be said. I don't know, I would appreciate being a person who has that ability to remain calm and sort of, you know, there are people who are able to go day after day, remain on, you know, sort of a certain equilibrium. You know, most of us have ups and downs. There's a certain harmony and equilibrium about Yosef. What about Yehuda? Serenity is a good word. A serenity. There's some kind of something in his neshama. Because it's all tzidkus, piety, goodness is part of his nature. What are the blessings that Yosef is given by both Yaakov and Moshe? Birchot Shamayim and Birchot Aretz. Birchot Shamayim and Birchot Tahom, the heavens and the earth. There is something in the character of Yosef that brings together heaven and earth meet in Yosef. What's Yehuda? Yehuda is completely different. Yehuda, he fails. He fails miserably in with the problem of Yosef. Shimon and Levi say, "Let's kill him." What does Yehuda say? "Ma betza, what will we gain if we will kill him v'chisinu et tamo?" And we'll cover. "Lechu, let us go and sell him. Let us go and sell him to the Ishmaelim." The Gemara says, "Kol ha'mevorech es Yehuda,
whoever blesses Yehuda, in other words, sort of gives Yehuda Yashikarech that he saved Yosef's life, Eino Elam Minna'etz, this is a rejection of God. It was a very poor compromise. And the fact is that the poor compromise is expressed by Rashi, and there's one chapter in Torah that tells us the story of Yehuda. There's one chapter. And that chapter is in this week's Sedra. Right after the sale of Yosef, chapter 38 in Bereshit is a chapter that all scholars have dealt with this chapter, and if only they would have known Rashi, or they would have known a Gemara, they would have understood this chapter. Right before Revi in Parshat Vayeshev, it says, "V'hamidonim mochru al Tal Mitzrayim, v'midonim sold into Egypt to Potiphar," the killer of Paro. I mean, he's going to be, he find himself in a home, in a house that is cruel and destructive, and he remains Yosef HaTzadik. He's going to become part of the household of the executioner of Egypt, the Hamas of Paro, the killers. And then there is an interruption in the story of Yosef. The story is interrupted for an entire chapter, all of chapter 38. Chapter 31, the first pasuk, is going to take us back to the story of Yosef. And it's going to repeat again, first pasuk in chapter 39, V'Yosef, Hudab Mitzrayim, Yosef was taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, the executioner of Paro, purchased him from the Ishmaelim who had brought him down there. What is here in between? What is it that interrupts the story of Yosef? You know what interrupts the story of Yosef? And it came to pass at that time, Yehuda went down from his brothers. And he pitched his tent at Ish Adulami Ushmochira. The story of Yehuda is chapter 38. In the middle of the story of Yosef, we have the story of Yehuda. And Rashi says, Lama Nismaka Parsha Zulakan, why is the Parsha of Yehuda and his marriage and the three children and his wife dies and then his two children who are married to Tamar die, and then the whole story with him meeting this prostitute on the road and he lives with her and it is his daughter-in-law. What do we need this whole story here? Lama Nismaka Parsha Zulakan, why is this Parsha here? V'hifzik b'parsha Tosha Yosef, and it interrupts the Parsha of Yosef. Lelameh, this comes to tell us, Shehoriduhu Echov Migdulato, his brothers brought him down from his greatness. Kishero B'tzorat Avim, when they saw the suffering of their father. The pasuk says at that time, Vayede Yehuda Me'etechav, he went down from his brothers. What it really means is his brothers brought him down. Because when they saw the suffering of their father, they said, Ato Amarto Lemocho, you're the one who said we should sell him. Ilu Amato Lahoshiva, would you have told us to send him back to father? Hayinu Shamalucha, we'd have listened to you. In a sense, what the brothers are saying to Yehuda, Yehuda has already, he has already manifested leadership. He tells them, sell him, and the brothers listen to him. So we are talking about somebody else now who has the qualities of leadership. For some reason, they listen to him. There must be something in the character of Yehuda that represents strength and determination. He is more powerful than they are. Do you know what this story is? The story here is the story of the great struggle of Yehuda. Yehuda is not the tzaddik. Yehuda has fallen. He has fallen badly. He is rejected by his brothers. He goes off alone. He goes off alone, absolutely rejected. And from this rejection, he rises to the greatness that is going to make him the melech, make him king. And what is the moment of that greatness? The courage that is manifested by Yehuda. He is the one who has paskened that his daughter-in-law is to be taken out and burned at the stake. And as she is being taken out to be burned, she says, I am pregnant by the man to whom this staff and this signet ring belongs. And Yehuda, without hesitation, is able to say those two great words, Tzadka, she is right, Mimeni, it is from me. That expression of courage and honesty and truth, which most people would not be able to do. It took tremendous, tremendous strength. And it means that Yehuda has gone through a struggle. By nature, he was rough and he was tough. Yehuda is the one that must become the Moshel Benafsho, the one who rules over his will. He is the one who becomes the Kovesh et Yitzchak. He does have a Yetzirah. He's not by nature good, but he struggles and he overcomes. And do you know what happens? Immediately after that, the children, the twins, are born. I can't go into that now, but that is so fascinating. The whole story with the twins. She gave birth and there are twins. The Mialedet places a red bendala on the one that begins to come out first. And then he brings the hand of the embryo goes back in. And then behold, his brother comes out. There's another one who pushes his way out. Vatomen, she said, Ma paratzta olocha olecha paretz. Why did you breach out in this way? Vayikra shemo paretz. And she called his name Paretz. Afterwards came out his brother, the one who had the red. It was a red, the red bandala. Vaacha yotzeh ochiv. His brother came out afterwards. Asher al yado hashoni, who had the red bandala on his hand. Vayikra shemo zerach. The Medrash is going to say that when Shaul began to suspect that David may be the one, he asked, tell me his family background, where does he come from? And when they told him that he was a direct descendant of Peretz, he said, he is the one. Peretz represents the one who breaks out. A struggle, but the one who emerges victorious in the struggle. At the end of Sefer Rut, it takes us all the way back to Yehuda, to Peretz, to Oved, to Yishai, to David. Didn't we learn about David? Didn't we learn about David? That David is, he's Admoni, Mifei Nayim, right? He's the Reuter. He has the character and the personality of an Esav, but he becomes Yifei Nayim. David has struggles. He has to struggle with himself. He's not the calm, serene tzaddik that a Yosef is. He has to struggle, but he is able to overcome. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that the one who's going to be melech over Yisrael, the one who's going to be king, is the one who is able to best understand his subjects. Yehuda can understand them better than Yosef, because Yehuda is the one who struggles, and he knows the struggle of each and every individual. He will, in the final analysis, be more compassionate and more understanding. He will be able to lead them in a way that Yosef will not. Yosef can prepare the way, but Yosef cannot be the king. The story of Yehuda over here is the story of a Yehuda who struggles, and he's going to have other struggles in his lifetime. He is going to struggle with Yosef, but ultimately he is going to be the Kodesh at Yitzchok. David is going to have all sorts of struggles. In a sense, because of these struggles, they suffer. And there is something about suffering that purifies, that cleanses, that raises the human being to gives him a sensitivity to the suffering and the struggle of others. If you never went through the same suffering, you'll never understand somebody else. Never understand. It's only once man has gone through suffering and struggle, only then is he able to understand the other. That is Yehuda. In a sense, that's Klal Yisrael. Why must there be a Galut Mitzrayim? Why must there be an exile in Egypt? What was the purpose of the exile? The purpose of the exile, the Torah says afterwards, so that the neshama, the soul of the Jewish people, should be finally honed by that suffering. They should understand the underdog. They should understand the difficulties that people have in life. It was called the Kur HaBarzel, Torah calls it. Is that in which they are cleansed and they are purified and they are sanctified. You need that struggling. Only through struggle and suffering does man grow. When something comes too easily, we never appreciate it properly. For Yosef, his tzidkus came easily. For Yehuda, it came after great difficulty. So therefore, like his mother Rachel, Yosef is the great enabler. And in time to come, and we need him quickly now, Moshiach ben Yosef is the one who is to set the stage for the Moshiach ben David, who is to come afterwards. If I was now to begin the story of David, I would say here as well, but with a different meaning. Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ele, and it came to pass after these things, v'ha'elokim nisa et David. God raised and uplifted David. He's going to be raised by the suffering that he's going to have at the hand of Shaul. For him to maintain his equilibrium, and we're talking about somebody who by nature is a cruel and difficult person. The difficulty and the cruelty of David is expressed by the Medrash that we had learned, that when Adam HaRishon saw what was going to happen in generations to come, this David, Ein Lo Chayim, would have no life at all. Because what his personality was not the kind of living that would be called life. But he overcomes. He has the strength and the ability to make of himself a David. And the most trying period of time is going to come now. And he is going to pass test after test. You're going to watch David. It's going to be absolutely amazing to watch a David as he passes extremely difficult tests one after another. So two people are being tested. For that matter, the two people are the ones that are, in a sense, being used to test one another. But Shaul is being punished, but his punishment is instructive. David is being honed, sharpened, and purified to become Melech. He's going to have to be Kovesh Yitzchak. He's going to be pursued time and time again. A lo avel b'kapo, an innocent person. Yet he never once speaks out against the one whom he sees to be Mashiach Hashem, the anointed one of God. He's going to maintain his dignity and his honesty and his goodness against the overwhelming odds. That makes him David Melech Yisrael. That makes him the one who comes from a Yehuda. So it goes from Leah, the Yaps on it. Leah, the one who has courage and strength and determination, she's going to go after things. She's not necessarily the tzedek as the Krachel is, but she's able to achieve the greatness that way. Chaz Tishon, that Chazal meant that she was a Zona, but she had chutzpah, she had determination. That's what Chazal meant. Rachel, Leah becomes Yehuda, and Yehuda becomes David, the Admoni im Yefeinayim, the one who is the Moshe Berucho, the Kovesh at Yitzchak. He's the one who's going to become Melech.